I'm Leah.
Hi, I'm Kat.
And I'm Dina. Today, our discussion topic will be strength in numbers.
Since health isn't just something that is relegated to the medical or institutional, it also becomes important to think about what it means for health to be in the context of a community.
We use the term local
to speak about the place where people come from, not necessarily geographically, but the lived experiences, because a lot of the time, is really helpful to be able to contextualize your situation within people who you vibe with and who truly understand what you're going through.
When people talk about community health in terms of patients, it's almost always about medical institutions or like support groups. The very practical, very default ideas for what community health looks like. And while these aren't necessarily bad, they aren't always the best for an individual's needs.
So like one example of this is patient advocacy organizations, which are kind of geared towards patient and like caregiver-oriented education, advocacy, and they're like usually nonprofit groups and they're great. But the NCBI like recognizes that a lot of these patient advocacy organizations have funding that comes from places like pharmaceutical companies.
And that's not to say every pharmaceutical company is bad, right? But there is a possible conflict of interest, or more importantly, the same structural problems that are present in the medical system might also be present in this patient advocacy group if the funding is similar or if they operate within the same theory. Or it could be that the patient advocacy organization does not cater to you because you do not fit into the normal expected patient under your condition or illness. For example, if you are a man with breast cancer, there aren't a lot of breast cancer organizations that focus specifically on men. From everything symbolically to pink ribbons to even the funding that is available for different patients, they tend to be geared towards women. And that is an example of how patient advocacy organizations, when expected to be the default for patient support, cannot support the patient as necessary for their mental and physical well-being.
And another example of this, which I think is like topical and is something that is still very much going on, is how institutions can sort of invisibilize and visibilize certain groups. So a good example of this wonderful article on N Plus One magazine by Emily Bass is that the Human Rights Campaign
calls itself America's largest civil rights organization working to achieve LGBT equality. But there have been countless protests about how the HRC hasn't really talked about HIV/AIDS as much as it talks about marriage equality. Of course, this is a little bit outdated, but it still stands that a lot of organizations, by advocating for certain issues over others and positioning themselves as advocates of a specific group of people, end up associating a norm with, in this case, what it means to be LGBT. And in this case, by doing so, have also denormalized having HIV and AIDS as being a part of the LGBTQ community at large. And in this way, there are instances where patient advocacy organizations, although in general may be doing good, end up creating opportunities for erasure to happen of certain people, or in the case of healthcare, of certain patients through their advocacy, which again is emblematic of structural issues that translate into these organizations that are supposed to be the support networks for marginalized peoples, including patients. Which brings us to the question of what community health can look like, especially in the world we live in right now.
Especially with COVID-19. I think community health can take a very virtual narrative. I just want to draw from my friend Sarah Latta's experience being a type 1 diabetic and having COVID symptoms for a very long time. She was able to join a Facebook support group, and it's been a very viable virtual community for her, especially since in this time, what a community looks like is people coming together for a cause, right? And since it's not able to happen in the physical, it's been happening through this virtual landscape, and she's been able to document symptoms, document experiences with different medications, document hardship. There's a relationship there between her and her community that actually generates support and autonomy, and it's really beneficial to her health moving forward. Even if none of these herbal treatments or supplemental treatments that are recommended by some individuals on the site, she's been able to find community, experience, to fight loneliness in a time where people who are struggling with long-lasting COVID symptoms are very rare and spread out all over the country. And it's just been a really helpful tool for her.
I think that's something that's really important when considering communal health, and Leah, you brought this up, is the idea of loneliness. Obviously, when people are sick and it's something more than just a simple fix, because I think most of the times when we talk about serious conversations of health, it gets into kind of these ongoing treatment plans or anything like that. And the biggest thing that the health community doesn't acknowledge is that it's very easy for people to give up. Even within larger communities of their family, sometimes they can feel like they are so alone in whatever they're facing from a medical perspective, that there's no point, that there's no light at the end of the tunnel, that this just kind of like state of experience where they're suffering is the only thing, and that they're totally alone. And in this way, we can see how physical health will often have a tie-in with mental health, and where this loneliness will literally be debilitating. But if people are able to find a community with other people where they can understand that there's a new way of setting up a life, let's say that this is some type of condition that they are going to face for the rest of their lives, having someone else that teaches them and helps them understand how they can make a new life and make a new path and adjust expectations and understanding, that can be transformational in how people approach their illness, and that it doesn't have to be something that defines them. And I think that that's an aspect of communal health that is so necessary, that needs to be on a larger scale in the healthcare system.
Another example of this would be Deborah Denez's book, Zika. In her book, she discussed mothers from the northern part of Brazil who were diagnosed with Zika virus or not during their pregnancy, and their children have a condition called microcephaly, an acute swelling of brain and like fetal complications, fetal abnormalities. And what they did is join a WhatsApp.
Not everybody's situation was the same, but the one thing that connected them all was that their children had microcephaly. And I think this touches on something important, which is that support groups don't necessarily have to be like medical or too scientific. Like, this is just a group of moms sharing photos of their children with microcephaly flourishing and living their lives. And that is really helpful in order to create the community and the sense that this is valid, which a lot of the times when you have nothing but a diagnosis, you can feel like you are the problem, or in this case, like the children will have really hard lives. And although they will have different lives, and although they will have their own set of challenges, by sort of embracing this community aspect to it, that you are not alone, there's a sense of solidarity. And I think what Kat was touching on, a sense of alleviation of a lot of the mental stress that comes from it. Like, this reminds me of an article by The Lancet, which talked about how the World Health Organization has basically said that there's no health without mental health. And of course, mental health is like a really broad category, but in a lot of ways, it intersects with all the other aspects of health, especially the idea that you are not an anomaly or like this weird, like strange exhibit or this rare, like off case is very important.
In reference to like the previous podcast, patient autonomy, biomedicine is this scale that tends to be linear, but in a more holistic sense, we can break the healthcare system into multiple parts like training, hospitals, residency, primary care, clinics, and the most important part, patients. Local communities help bridge the gaps between these different groups and help the overall experience in healthcare. They're vital.
Right. I also love that we're talking about local communities as something that are strangely can be global with like social media. I think that's wonderful. Like, I'm thinking about, there's a YouTuber called Martina. They run a channel called Simon and Martina. And, you know, she was talking about how she was watching RuPaul's Drag Race. And one of the drag queens called Evie Oddly was like sitting in a really weird way. To her, she was like, I also have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. So does this drag queen. And we both sit the same way. And she was like, oh, like sitting that way is comfortable for everybody with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And that was helpful because she could share that with some of her subscribers, which like a doctor isn't going to be like, I recommend you sit this way. You know, that's not like something that's necessarily covered in medical training.
I think that where we are in this conversation ties very well in with the title of the podcast and dealing with how revolutions can be small and how simply acknowledging your form of suffering in a larger group and finding a community, finding that connection, that can be a revolution. That's a big deal. It allows ownership. And so often when patients are diagnosed with something, they feel very disconnected from their diagnosis, from their current illness, from their current sickness, from their current plan of action. But with communities, it allows people to understand themselves through others as well as themselves. This idea of owning yourself is nothing small. It's actually huge. And through social media, whether it be Facebook, Instagram, or even a celebrity acknowledging to being a part of this group, that's a huge way of bringing a level of commonness, and it allows people to find themselves again after they realize that they have to find a new reality with whatever their new situation.
You know, Bertha and I are just like very close friends. To reference, we both have gastrointestinal issues. And I think it's so interesting because the most time when I felt like, okay, this is great, this is like normal, I'm okay, wasn't even for this interview, but was when we were both, oh, I wish humans were quadrupedal. You know, because the abdominal muscles like sort of support like your internal organs. And it was just such a one-off thing. It wasn't even a serious, like, let's talk about our guts type of thing. But that was the time when I felt the most supported.
To echo something that Leah said earlier is that local communities are a vital part of health.
And there is strength in numbers.